broadcasting and streaming worldwide from the Golf Club Studios, it's the Golf Club Radio Show with Danielle Tucker.
Hi, Danielle. It's Ben Crenshaw.
Ben Crenshaw, it's going to be 91 degrees today. I say that it's time for architects to build in sort of a siesta spot so that we can all get in the covers, you know, with fans and everything blowing for that little rest period during the, never mind. A dumb idea, but under the trees would be nice as well. Good morning, Hawaii. It's Saturday, September 2nd. Welcome into the clubhouse, the Golf Club Studios on the beautiful south shore of Oahu. I've got Matt Ginella coming in today, Oliver Aliquiano, Karen Palacios Jensen, and Mark Rolfing is in the house. It's going to be partly cloudy today, becoming mostly sunny, isolated to scattered showers in the morning. Windward and Mauka, a little bit more rain, scattered showers in the afternoon. High, yep, 86 to 91, depending on where you are. I want to be as high up as possible. It's always cooler up high. Why is that? Trade winds 15 to 20 miles per hour. We're going to come back with Mark Rolfing after this.
Streaming worldwide from sunny Hawaii, it's Danielle Tucker's The Golf Club Radio Show, brought to you by these fine sponsors. MD Restoration, water, flood, broken pipe cleanup, 24-7 licensed and insured. Aloha Power's Megastore is open behind the Costco gas station in Iwilei. Aloha Power Equipment, Iwilei and Waipahu. We put power at your fingertips. SciPac Cybersecurity, an elite group of cyber specialists providing the deepest level of protection anywhere in Hawaii. Call 808-861-9595. And Aloha Section PGA. Teach your children to play golf. It's the gift that lasts forever. Now, here's Danielle Tucker.
And let's welcome into the clubhouse Mark Rolfing, golf analyst, golf commentator for Golf Channel and NBC Sports, member Hawaii Golf Hall of Fame, 2012 PGA Distinguished Service Award recipient with his wife, Debbie, and contributor to the Dad's Advice Project. Wonderful book. Welcome into the clubhouse, Mark Rolfing.
Well, good morning, Danielle, and what a great morning it is. I'm watching the Walker Cup from St. Andrews and just thinking about how great our game is because a week ago we had two of the best players in the world dueling for $75 million in Atlanta, and here you've got amateurs playing golf for no money at the home of golf, St. Andrews, and it's equally as compelling.
Yes, absolutely, and we want to win this time, don't we?
Yeah, we do. You know, it's going to be a close match. There's no doubt about it. Right now, Great Britain and Ireland have a little bit of an edge, but it's going to come down to the final singles matches tomorrow.
How many times have we won versus Great Britain and Ireland?
Oh, I think it's heavily in our favor. We went a stretch where we won for 30 years in a row, I think. But I think as we've seen in the rest of the game, you know, the world is catching up. So even though the U.S. typically wins this Walker Cup, the routes are just not there like we used to have.
Yeah, exactly. They're coming on strong. It's going to be an interesting Ryder Cup for that reason, don't you think?
I am so looking forward to the Ryder Cup. You know how much I love that event, Danielle, and I really believe the Ryder Cup has become the most compelling event in golf. I don't know why in the world everybody thinks the Americans should be favorites. Going to Rome, I really think the European team is very, very strong. And everybody's talking about, well, McIlroy and Rahm and Hovland in the top of their lineup. But, boy, they've got some guys that I think are going to be captain's picks this in the next couple of days that are really good, too. This Ludvig Åberg is tremendous, and I think he will be on that team.
And how about the Fitzpatrick brothers?
Yeah, I think the parents have a little bit of a dilemma today. Like, who are they going to root for today? Both of them, I guess. Maybe a tie.
A tie for first. No, that doesn't work. You're right. They've got a dilemma today. I want to talk to you a little bit about the Ryder Cup picks. You know, our team is set. The European team, they have not done their captain's picks yet, because, of course, they're still playing. They're playing in Switzerland, Concert. It's a fabulous, fabulous vista. I'd be so distracted if I were playing there. Gosh, look at that mountain peak. Wow. But I'm sure they're not. So in the meantime, we've got Rory McIlroy, John Rahm, Victor Hovland, and Tyrrell Hatton. They're automatic qualifiers onto Team Europe. Kind of like Scotty Scheffler, Wyndham Clark, Brian Harman, Patrick Cantlay, Max Homa, all qualified, Xander Schauffele, by the position they were in, their U.S. rankings list. Okay, but we've got six wild card captain's picks that were already chosen by Zach Johnson and his team. Steve Stricker, Davis Love III, Jim Furyk, Fred Couples, they're all vice captains, and the captain is Zach Johnson. They chose Justin Thomas, Jordan Spieth, Colin Morikawa, Brooks Koepka, Ricky Fowler, and Sam Burns. There's a couple of people on this list and some people who are left off the team. That's like, for instance, Keegan Bradley. Keegan Bradley was higher up than, let's say, Jordan Spieth. And where did Brooks Koepka come from since he's on the LIV team? And I thought LIV guys weren't supposed to be playing in the Ryder Cup. Can we start with Brooks Koepka and kind of figure that one out?
Yeah, so really, you know, there is no written rule anywhere that says that the guys that have gone to LIV can't play in the Ryder Cup. The only qualification that would have prevented him from playing would be if he was no longer a member of the PGA of America. Oh. Like a lot of the Europeans that went to LIV, they were no longer part of the European Tour. But there's a clause in the Americans that does allow him to play because they get an extra year of eligibility. And that's why Koepka was eligible. The Europeans that went to LIV are not. If you think about Koepka, there was no way to leave him off the team. He was seventh in points, so he was the next on the list. He also is a guy, of all the players that went to LIV, that still hangs out and gets along with the American players. He never was part of the lawsuit from LIV. He never has publicly talked about how great LIV is or how bad the PGA Tour is, like some of the other players that went to LIV did. And so I think he was a natural pick. A lot of this is made by, a lot of these decisions are made by the team. They wanted a guy that would fit in, and that's literally why Sam Burns got the pick over Keegan Bradley. Keegan Bradley is not really one of the guys on the PGA Tour like Sam Burns is, not to mention that Sam Burns is Scotty Scheffler's best friend.
Oh, so this is not necessarily you earned it. This is more like, okay, you fit with the personality of the team that's already in place.
Yeah, everybody thinks that Zach Johnson makes these picks, or Zach Johnson and the other assistant captains. More than anything, it's the players that have already qualified that decided. If you think about Whistling Straits at the last Ryder Cup, Scotty Scheffler effectively got picked by the rest of the players, and the main reason they picked him was he was going to get paired with Bryson DeChambeau. They didn't have a guy that they felt comfortable playing with DeChambeau. That's a really hard guy to partner with, and Scheffler could do it, and that's one of the reasons they picked him. So I'm sure with Sam Burns, one of the reasons he was picked is he's going to play with Scotty Scheffler.
Okay, now it all makes sense. Now it all makes sense. I understand now. I mean, when I thought of, Tony Finau, playing strong, maybe not this part of the season, but when you look at Ricky Fowler, he's stronger than Ricky Fowler. And so, I love Ricky Fowler. Don't get me wrong, guys. I love Justin Thomas, Jordan Spieth, the whole committee. But if I'm going with the strong ones, I wouldn't, they're not strong. But maybe because they're going to coalesce as a team, that will give them the strength. And someone said there's no way you could have Justin Thomas not be on the team because he was born for the Ryder Cup.
Well, he was, but really, let's just go over those two guys, Fowler and Thomas and Finau, three guys, and Finau. Frankly, Ricky Fowler is one of the most popular guys on the entire PGA Tour. There's nobody that doesn't like Fowler. It's the same thing with Finau. He's very popular, but because he's got a family and five kids and aunties and uncles and everybody all over the place, you know, he doesn't hang as much with the rest of the players. And so, consequently, Fowler, amongst the players, was a more popular pick. But the one that you know, is causing everybody some consternation is Justin Thomas. That was a no-brainer. Why? Because of Jordan Spieth. They're one of the most successful duos, you know, in Ryder Cup history already, even though they're young. And so I'm sure there was a lot of pressure from Jordan Spieth, you know, to have Justin Thomas on that team, and that is an instant pairing. You're going to have Schauffele and Cantlay, and you're going to have Spieth and Thomas for sure.
Got it. Okay. Yeah. And, you know, I understand. And we want to have a team that wins, and you can't mix up a bunch of people who don't get along in the team room and expect to go out on the course and put all that behind them and win. It just doesn't work like that. You've got to be a team. So, yeah, thank you. Thank you for that. So have you thought about the captain's picks? The Europeans are going to have a strong team this year.
Well, they are. The Europeans have the luxury, though, of playing their top guys in all the matches. You will see McIlroy play every match. You'll see John Rahm play every match. You'll see Victor Hovland play every match. The European guys don't have the egos like the Americans. One of the hardest jobs for the American captain is to sit players on the bench and not play them in a session. So the American players, there's a little more of a dilemma for Johnson in terms of he's got to get those guys out on the course as much as he can. Europe is not like that. You will likely see some of the European rookies maybe only play one match before the singles. You know, if they put a guy on the team like Nikolaj Højgaard, I think there's a really good chance this guy's going to get a captain's pick. I think Adrian Meronk may get a captain's pick. Ludvig Åberg may get a captain's pick. But if they do, it's not like they're going to play all these matches like, let's say, Hatton would or Tommy Fleetwood even or Matt Fitzpatrick. They are going to ride their horses, Europe. That's going to be different than the Americans.
Well, I hope Tommy Fleetwood is one of the picks because I like watching Tommy Fleetwood play.
Absolutely.
You know, and when they produced We Are the World, the song, We Are the World. Remember that one? Long time ago.
I remember that one.
Okay.
Yeah.
The rule was leave your ego at the door. They didn't, all these really, really, really famous, amazing performers, superstars were coming together in one room to create this one song to send a message. We are the world. Okay. Get it together, everybody. And leave your ego at the door. It seems that that should be up on our team room, too.
Well, yeah. I mean, it's hard for our team. I mean, our guys make a lot more money in general. They have a lot more corporate affiliations. You know, the 12 American players are like having 12 little individual corporations that once every 2 years, you got to figure out how to get them together and get them to get along and play as partners. It's not like that in Europe. The Ryder Cup is so much more important, I believe, still to the Europeans that, you know, they're pairing these guys as partners a year in advance of the Ryder Cup so they can get used to each other over there.
Well, that's smart. And, you know, but we win. So
yeah, it's going to be a great match. So either way, Rome is going to be absolutely spectacular.
It's going to be indeed. And you're just back from the Tour Championship. Have we figured out the best way to wrap up the season? Do you like the way that it's being done now?
I think it's getting better. I don't think they have it quite right yet. The handicapping system is confusing early in the week. Once the tournament gets going, by like Thursday night or Friday, it's starting to take shape, and it doesn't matter who started at 10 under or who started at 3 under. I still don't think they quite have it right, but I will tell you this. I don't know when I've ever seen better golf than what we saw Sunday between Hovland and Schauffele.
Oh, yeah.
62 and 63, it reminded me of Nicklaus and Watson. at the Open Championship at Turnberry, way back in 77. That's how old I am. It reminded me a little bit maybe of Mickelson and Stenson at Troon when they had that duel about 6 years ago at Royal Troon. But that, to me, was some of the best golf I've ever seen. And Victor Hovland is on a trajectory to become the number one player in the world. There's no doubt in my mind.
Yeah, he's playing an amazing game right now. But why is it necessary for this handicapping?
Well, they're trying to reward a player that has a great regular season in the FedEx Cup points. If they all start, you know, even in the Tour Championship, then the guy who finished 30th on the points list would be in the same position as the guy who was number one. And so they're trying to find a way to give a little bit of an advantage. You know, like in the NFL playoffs, if you have the best record, you get a bye in the first round of the playoffs. Or you get home field advantage. They're
right.
Trying to give a little bit of reward for doing better than the other guy, let's say, in the regular season. They still don't quite have it right, though, I don't think.
Yeah, it's just my brain goes, what? 10 under?
Yeah, 10 under, 8 under, yeah. What?
All righty. It's wonderful watching the Europeans. By the way, the LPGA is playing in Portland, and boy, they have a long season, and one of their players who's actually in the lead had Perrine Delacour from France, and she was talking about how, and this is for all of us to take into account when we're out playing the game. She said that her self-esteem, if she's playing good, she's good. She's a good person. If she's playing bad, she's not a good person. She's a bad person. And can you imagine having your game of golf define who you are inside? And she's working with psychologists. I thought it was so cool that she just came out and said all that on Golf Central, Golf Channel. That was such, and to talk about being with psychologists. That took a lot of, she said, I have never talked about this much, and not on television. That was very cool.
Yeah, I think, Danielle, there's more of that than we hear. I don't think players are really very willing to admit just how consuming the game can be. We've seen a number. Look at Matt Wolf. Matt Wolf was a no-miss, cannot-miss guy coming out of college. And he totally lost his mojo once he got out in the professional ranks and lost his game along with it. And, there are very few people like Rory McIlroy. Golf is not everything in the world to Rory McIlroy. People want him to play more. People want him to win more majors. People want him to do all this stuff. But the fact is, golf is not everything in Rory McIlroy's life. And I think he's a lot healthier mentally than some of the players that basically make it their entire life.
Yeah, and Tony Finau is another example.
Absolutely.
Yeah, having a strong family bond and having other things be important to you. The women on tour, living out of vans because that it's expensive to be traveling all the time. Imagine being traveling all the time and you're picking up your own expenses and, your income depends on how well you play. I mean, that's a huge burden right there. And so kudos to everyone and all the women on the tour and all you do to pursue your greatness. I think it's fantastic. Can we go to Maui? Because when you got home, you must have heard about Oprah Winfrey and Dwayne The Rock Johnson getting inspired by Dolly Parton. She set up a fund when the wildfires swept through Galen, Tennessee. And now Winfrey and Dwayne The Rock Johnson have created this fund, the Maui Wildfire Fund, putting up $5 million apiece so that people can get a stipend every month out of that fund to give them actual cash so they can decide what, I think that's fantastic.
Yeah, it really is. I will tell you, I was only gone a week. But what happened and what progressed on this island in terms of raising dollars for the recovery was just remarkable to me. We need a lot of money. It's going to cost a tremendous amount of money. That Lahaina is going to be, a total rebuild in the long run. But in the short term, you know, we've got thousands of people that are displaced. And what they need more than anything is money and cash right now. And there's so many great organizations. The United Way over here has just been spectacular. A lot of it bolstered by a huge donation by Century Insurance, who, of course, is the title sponsor of the season opening event here in 4 months. There's a lot of work to do here, but I'm sensing a glimmer of hope and positivity that I really think is starting to permeate here, and it's going to take hold pretty soon. And we're going to get a school built at Kapalua, you know, that's probably not going to take 30 to 60 days to build. It's going to be a temporary school, but we need schools so desperately on this side right now, and I think that's going to happen. So I am encouraged. I still have the heaviest heart you can imagine, but it really, I think, is taking a turn for the more positive right now.
Oh, thank you. And I feel it, you know, when you said that. And I'm so glad. The idea of busing the kids from the west side all the way to the other side of the island, I mean, that just, you know, doesn't work.
No, it doesn't. Well, think about this, Danielle. If you were a kid growing up in Lahaina, would you want to now have to drive by the devastation there two times a day in a school bus and see it?
No.
And relive it twice a day going to school? No. There's no way that's going to happen.
Yeah. Thank you so much for joining us. You sound great. I'm so glad to know that you're at home and I wanted to know if you felt, you know, a change in and how people. I'm certain that this is so hard, but a little glimmer is something to be happy about. Mark Rolfing, analyst and golf commentator, Golf Channel and NBC Sports, member of the Hawaii Golf Hall of Fame. Thank you so much for being inside the clubhouse with us this morning. A pleasure talking with you.
Thank you, Danielle, as always.
Aloha. We're going to come back and we're going to do a little bit of getting our game together, as it were, because Karen Palacios Jensen is in the house. My name is Danielle Tucker. This is the Golf Club.
Stay tuned. We'll be hitting the greens with Danielle Tucker when we return to the Golf Club. Poipu Bay on Kauai's South Shore. Share our home with Need a Gift for that special someone? Tired of giving fruit baskets you know are getting recycled? Give a Poipu Bay Golf Gift Certificate. Whether it's a birthday, business, or anniversary, here's the one gift that is always the right size and the perfect date. Just give us a call and it will be waiting for you to pick up or mail to your office. There may even be time to sneak in a nine. Call us for the perfect gift, where great golf is played every day at Poipu Bay on the Garden Isle.
Aloha Powers Labor Day weekend sale. You knew there had to be one, right? In the market for a really good riding mower. Aloha Power Equipment's Labor Day weekend sale is on. Why buy a riding mower from a big box store that's been sitting outside getting rusty, dirty, wet? You want to get a good warranty and service at Aloha Power Equipment. We service everything we sell, from the 36-inch to the 72-inch. We've got the right mower for you. Delivery available. Trade-ins, welcome. And we ship off-island. Aloha Power Equipment, Iwile, next to the Costco gas station and in Waipahu. Aloha Power Equipment, we put power at your fingertips. Tell them Danielle sent you.
PGA Junior League is a fun team golf experience for kids that the entire family can enjoy.
Boys and girls learn the game from PGA and LPGA professionals and have a great time with friends.
Find your team and get ready for a fun and exciting PGA Junior League season.
No high fives for me, let's go.
I want to see you out playing in your jersey and having fun. Visit PGAJuniorLeague.com.
The golf club tip number 47. When mad about your slice, don't hit the tree with your driver.
break it over your knee. Now back to the Golf Club with Danielle Tucker.
Welcome into the clubhouse. I've got some tea times for you. Volcano, 62 degrees this morning. That's hot for a volcano. It's usually 57. There's a 936, and the Glowbirds are getting out on the golf course. May you all hit the sweet spot every time. Makalei has a 922. Poipu on Kauai has a 1040 and a 1220, and the Dusty Freeman group is going out. Sounds like a singing group, doesn't it? The Dusty Freeman group. Turtle Bay, 9 o'clock, 1010. Raw Hawaiian Country Club, 948, 1140. This is the Eva Beach Golf Course where you could play at 918, 11 o'clock, 1210. Wailea Gold has a 1048. Emerald, an 850, a 936, and a 1010. Blue has an 11 o'clock. Maui Nui has an 840, a 928, and a 1024. But you know what? You probably want to wait. Hold the phone. You want to wait and listen. Karen Palacios Jensen, creator of CardioGolf.com, a golf wellness company. She is an LPGA master teaching professional, lead instructor for Golf Channel, Golf Digest Top 50, best golf fitness trainer, the only LPGA professional on the list. This is the only LPGA professional on Golf Digest list of top 50 best golf fitness trainers. Yes. Welcome into the clubhouse, Karen Palacios Jensen.
Thanks for having me on, and thanks for reminding me to call.
All right. You've been teaching people fitness for a long time, golf fitness. When did you come up with cardio golf?
That's a great question. So a few years ago when I used to teach golf schools at Doral in Miami, people used to come down from the north, and they would take golf lessons all week, and then they would have to go home and practice in mid-January, and there's nowhere to practice. So what I did is I actually developed a program so people could practice inside without hitting balls. I cut down a little short practice club, and I made videos, and I brainstormed one night, and I came up with the name Cardio Golf, and that's kind of how it started. And then it developed into a class that I would teach. And now I have an online system where people can do it at home.
Oh, that's wonderful. So that's where the Shorty Club came from?
Exactly. One of the guys went back to New York, and he called me. This is before even text. He called me and he's like, oh, I love all your videos, but I'm not allowed to swing the club anymore in my house because I broke the chandelier. So then I came of cutting down the club. So you're not hitting balls with it, but you're practicing. But some great things about the Shorty Club is it feels like a regular golf club, but the club head is closer to the hands, so it's easier to see the club face. And because you're not hitting balls, there's no judgment of where the ball is going. So you can kind of make your move and really work on your swing movement without worrying about where the ball goes. What happens a lot of times, Danielle, is when people swing and they hit, you know, they see it go low left, and then they try to compensate and open the face, and so they're doing a different swing every time. So once you establish the move that you want to make, then you can kind of rehearse it over and over, and by the time you get to the golf course, then that move feels more natural.
I like that. I like the thought, but a couple of things comes up in my mind. You know, the backswing, I can't ever see it. You know, and so
right.
I'm trying to see whether I'm doing it right, but how do I see if I'm doing it right?
Well, so first of all, you want to make sure that you're in the right position. So you have your instructor maybe take a picture of you at the top or a video, and then have maybe rehearse it with him in front of the mirror so that you know exactly where it should be. And you look at it, and then you practice without looking. And then maybe you even videotape yourself while you're doing it so you can see. I mean, that's really the only way.
Yes.
You can see. Correctly.
Yes. But when I'm in my bar method class, I always position myself so that I can see whether my shoulders are straight. So I'm looking in either the reflection in the door, because it's glass, right? Or I'm looking in the mirror, depending on the way we're supposed to stand. So that's perfect, because if I think looking straight ahead and seeing something, you know, the backswing, you can now see where your arm is, which way the club head is positioned. Because I've always had to judge how well my backswing is by where the ball does go. But that
is one way of doing it. Yeah.
You know, I'm trying to just visualize all these things that you're telling us, because I want to, you know, get it in my brain that there's a way to do this, that, and I can do it inside, which is huge, because a lot of people live in apartments and there's no outside to go to, you know, there's no place. People think you're nuts. What are you doing out here? Yeah.
Oh, absolutely. And you can take it with you. It's into your suitcase, or, you know, you can have it in your office. There's a lot of downtime people have during the day, and you just pick up the club and make a few swings. And that's actually good for you. It's good to stand up, to do some movement just for life, not just for golf. It helps get the blood sugar metabolizing in your body moving. It prevents you from sitting down all day. That getting up and down is good exercise. So if you have it, in your office, take a few practice swings and then sit down, and then you can work a little bit and then get up later and take a break again and do it again.
That's why I like the name Cardio Golf, cardiogolf.com. This is Karen Balacios Jensen, and you can find her program at cardiogolf.com. And so whenever I say that, I think of cardio is good for my body and golf is good for my game, right? Putting it together, it's cardio golf. Just makes total sense. I was watching one of your videos that I had to watch it over and over again. 35 ways to use your golf gym balance ball.
Right.
Practice swings, weight shifts, seated positions, they're all there. It's wonderful seeing that video.
The balance ball is great. So a balance ball, people can imagine, it's like a giant beach ball, but it's sturdy enough that you can sit on. And just sitting on it is a great exercise. You have to stabilize your core, so your core works harder. But you can use it to position between your legs if you have a tendency to move your lower body a lot. And then you can turn your upper body over the resistance of your lower body. You can hold the ball as if you were swinging a club, and you have to extend your arms. So you have to make a really good turn. You can't bend your arms or the ball is going to pop out. You can use it to even learn to tip with. I have people position their body and lean towards their front leg so they can get the feeling of the weight staying on the front side. I use it a lot for people when they're putting, again, to position between the legs so that they don't rock or sway their lower body. So there's a lot of different ways to use it for golf. And then, of course, for core strength, rotation, you can sit on it, you can lay on it, you can roll it. So it's tons of ways to use the balance ball. It's one of those things that you have in your office. Again, you can take a break and do a few exercises.
Yeah, it's really good. I was also looking at the one exercise, the 35 ways rather to use the golf gym balance ball. One of them was a side movement that looked like it was really good for the waist. So many exercises kind of don't get to that waist and rib area, and that one really did.
Yeah, so you position yourself, you put the ball on the floor, you position your knee, and then you lean over it so it's like a sideline position, and then you put your hand behind your head, and then you can do a little side bend. So it's a great oblique and side bend exercise. So you're elongating your spine, stabilizing your body, and then using your core. And it's great. But think about it, Danielle. Most of us do movements that's forward and backwards during the day. We don't do a lot of side leaning or even that much rotation.
Yeah, and it's strong. So I just went to cardiogolf.com. You have a free trial. Tell us about that.
Right. So if you go on there, you can get a free trial, and you can do all my videos. And the easiest way to start a golf fitness program is to do like an assessment. So I take you through a battery of exercises to see how well your strength and flexibility are. Then after that, I have a weekly program. So you can start on Monday, and I take you through a warm-up, and we do a lot of swing drills, maybe on Monday might be cardio, Tuesday might be a little bit more strength, Wednesday might be core. So every day is a different, either a workout or a different part of the body that we're using, so you get a complete workout. And you're working on golf game at the same time, so kind of killing two birds with one stone.
Yeah, 7 days a week. Enjoy practicing your golf game from your home, your office, anywhere. You have a computer, a phone, smart device, doesn't matter, iPad. It's really quite wonderful what we can do today with all these devices.
It really is. And, you know, even if you're a beginner all the way up through a scratch golfer or professional golfer, I mean, you need exercise for daily life anyway. So if you're a golfer, why not incorporate some of those exercises to help your golf swing at the same time? You know, we don't have a lot of time. We can't, like, be practicing and working out and doing all the things that we need to do. So it's a way to consolidate and save some time.
Yeah. And I was reading something that you wrote about. For many years, I've heard golf commentators, and golf teachers using the phrase, the golf swing starts from the ground up. So let's talk about that. When, you know, you were saying that I really didn't know how to apply that knowledge to my actual golf swing until I saw a video of Justin Thomas, Tiger Woods, and Rory McIlroy's golf swing in slow motion. Let's get into it.
Yeah, that's a good point. And you probably do use the ground. You just don't know it, or you've ever, never thought about it. First of all, like, you're standing on the ground, the ball's on the ground, so you're using the ground as a base. And one of my early teachers a long time ago used to have me swing back and think shoulders and arms, and on the way down, hips and legs. So where a lot of people go wrong is they just go shoulders and arms on the way back, and then try to power through with shoulders and arms on the way down and flick at it with their wrists, when really the initiation of the lower body starts from the hip, the core, and then you're using the ground to push off, like you saw Justin Thomas, Scotty Scheffler, all the long drivers now. They actually, like, jump at the moment of impact. They're trying to launch the ball by squatting down and then extending up, and that's how they get power. And we all do that to some extent, but the pros do it a little bit more efficiently, and their sequencing is a little bit more efficient. We tend to, when I say we, the higher handicappers tend to kind of go over the top and just try to use all arms. So if you could incorporate a little bit more lower body using the ground force, it would be a lot better. So my slope, Danielle, you know, you can get on a downhill lie, and a downhill lie is hard for a lot of people, and that's because people fight gravity. When you're on a downhill lie, you have to lean towards the target, and then you actually need to shift your weight down towards the target more. Where people go wrong is they try to help the ball up in the air, so they defy gravity and try to lean back and pick the ball up with their hands and their wrists, which is the opposite of what you want to do. So getting on a downhill lie is a good way to learn how to use that ground force. You just put your weight down towards the target, and you have to, like, go more towards the target. Where people go wrong, like I said, is they kind of try to help the ball up in the air.
Wow. Yeah. That is. So is there a video on this, too?
Oh, absolutely. In fact, if you go on CardioGolf.com, I have a whole series of videos that are free. You don't need to have a subscription. So you can just kind of flick through. I show people how to use the slope, uphill, and downhill to help their swings. And the uphill lie is great. So a lot of people hit an uphill lie better, and that's because an uphill lie positions them with their weight already on their backside, so they load into their backside, and it's easier to swing back because most people kind of hang back anyway. So an uphill lie is great for the backswing to feel loaded and then get on the downslope to practice those downhill lies. And I do that a lot in my classes. We do uphill lies, I have them hold that position, and then we go to the downslope and then do the downhill lie for the downswing.
How many times, you know, we don't really practice those, you know, what you're suggesting is so wonderful. Yeah. Because can you imagine doing that on the driving range?
Exactly. There's nowhere ever practice, and most golf courses are hilly. I mean, they're designed to be hilly because make it challenging. You're never going to have a completely flat lie. So my slope does kind of fill that gap. When people go to a driving range, most of them are completely flat. And everyone's like, oh, I hit it great on the driving range. Like, well, yeah, because you got a great lie every single time. Now you're on the course with one foot higher than the other, and you got to hit it to a downslope. So it's challenging, really challenging.
Yeah, especially since most of us think, I'm falling. Now, Karen Palacios-Jensen is LPGA Master Teaching Professional, Lead Instructor for Golf Channel, Golf Digest Top 50, Best Golf Fitness Trainers, the only LPGA professional on the list. Karen Palacios-Jensen, when did you get into golf?
So I've been playing golf for a long time. I grew up on a golf course. My parents, when we were little, moved to, you know, kind of a country clubish neighborhood, and we lived on the golf course, so all the kids played golf, and we had a really good high school team in Chicago, where I'm from, because we had a lot of golfers. So I've been playing golf for a long time. I have to tell you how old I am, but I tell you how many years.
You don't have to do that.
It's north of a few years. So I've been playing a long time. And a lot longer than, like, you know, a lot of girls play golf now. When I was playing, we had, like, you know, three or four girls in a tournament and, like, you know, 50 boys. So I had to go through a lot of years to playing with the guys, which I love. But now it's fun because more women are playing.
Yeah. Yeah. Yes, it is. It is, because we're more encouraging of one another for the most part. I like what Julie Brown wrote, LPGA teaching professional. Cardio golf is a great learning tool. It frees the golfer up from worrying about what the golf ball is doing and helps them focus on the body motion. Of course, good cardio. Karen Palacios-Jensen, thank you so much for being inside the clubhouse with us again.
Yes, thanks so much for having me, and hopefully you'll get to do it again soon.
Yes, we will. Well, yeah, you're so busy, you need to tell me when you can. Otherwise, I'll just keep knocking on the door.
Okay, we'll schedule it. Thanks a lot, Danielle.
Thank you. Aloha. We're going to come back and talk with Oliver Oliquiano, PGA President and CEO of Island Pacific Golf Academy, speaking of all those 50 boys and, no, it's now 50 girls. Maybe. He'll tell us after this. My name is Danielle Tucker. This is The Golf Club.
Stay tuned. We'll be hitting the greens with Danielle Tucker when we return to The Golf Club. MD Restoration, 24/7 Emergency and Disaster Restoration Service. COVID compliant. Fire damage repair. Mold remediation. Asbestos abatement. Call 528-3434. And now, get MD cleaned.
Well, when Sears opened more than 60 years ago. Who made their signs? The Honolulu Sign Company. They do exterior building signs. They do lettered signs, real estate and lighted signs, parking signs, interior signs for businesses, for hotels, fire and government agencies, custom signs of every kind, all styles welcome. Call Terry, 847-4047, 847-4047. Honolulu Sign, serving Hawaii since 1939. Tell them Danielle sent you.
Poipu Bay on Kauai, South Shore. Share our home with Need a Gift for That Special Someone? Tired of giving fruit baskets you know are getting recycled? Give a Poipu Bay Golf Gift Certificate. Whether it's a birthday, business, or anniversary, here's the one gift that is always the right size and the perfect date. Just give us a call and it will be waiting for you to pick up or mail to your office. There may even be time to sneak in a nine. Call us for the perfect gift, where great golf is played every day at Poipu Bay on the Garden Isle.
The golf club tip number 47. When mad about your slice, don't hit the tree with your driver. Break it over your knee.
Now back to the golf club with Danielle Tucker.
Hello, ever, Oliver Aliquiano, PGA, the busiest man in golf, junior golf. Oliver Aliquiano, PGA President and CEO, Island Pacific Golf Academy, U.S. Kids Certified Top 50 U.S. Kids Golf Instructor, coach for Kamehameha School's golf team, Kapalama Campus, Titleist Performance Institute Certified PGA Game Changer Award recipient. Welcome into the clubhouse, Oliver.
Danielle, it's always a pleasure being on your show. I look forward to it. And again, thank you in advance for having me on.
Absolutely. And you're going to be busy at Pearl Country Club. What's going on at Pearl Country Club this weekend?
I am. Today's the first day of our two-day state invitational for U.S. Kids Golf. We've got kids from all over the state coming, including some from out of state. I got kids from San Jose. I've got some Samish, Washington. I've got kids from Mesa, Arizona, Loveland, Colorado, Coeur d'Alene, Idaho. I got one from New York, one from Laredo, Texas, Windermere, Florida. I got kids from all over the state and then some.
Wow.
So they're coming here to play at our state invitational, which is awesome of an event to come to. And I think it's going to be a great event for the next 2 days as long as the weather's good.
Yeah, it's going to be a hot one. It's going to be 91 degrees and the trade winds are blowing. Pearl Country Club is a fabulous golf course to be playing on. How many kids in total do you have?
I have 52. And I did the count here just earlier. It was about 18 of them were girls.
Right on.
So, yeah.
This is the state invitational, right? And so
this is the state.
And is this kind of like the states, and then you go on, the winners go on to something after this?
Yeah, so the winners of this event get a direct qualification to Pinehurst for next year.
Wow.
The World Championship, yeah. So you'll be excited to hear, though. I am working on doing two things. One, I'm looking at bringing back the regional competition or the regional event for U.S. Kids Golf. I'm trying to figure out the venue for that and what island we're going to be on, but that's a huge one because that involves inviting Asia to come over here to the United States. So we'll get kids from India, from Japan, from Philippines. So people from Asia will be coming over here for their regional event. And get this, I'm also talking to U.S. Kids Golf about starting the Girls Invitational for Hawaii.
Wow.
So there's two things going on that may potentially happen here pretty soon in the future.
Wow. Now, let's backpedal just a second here on that. The first thing you said, there are kids coming from around the United States to play in this event. How do they qualify for the state invitational? I always think of it as being a Hawaii state invitational.
Yeah, so to qualify to be in the state invitational, you have to play at a certain level. Right, so you have I think it's 14 levels in U.S. Kids Golf, and I think the minimum level to play in this event is 10. So you have to be a high caliber playing individual to be able to qualify to play in the state invitational. So it's not just open to anybody, because they're looking for good kids that are really good, so that they can further qualify to go to Pinehurst.
Right on, and you have players five to 14.
Right now, the youngest I have is seven.
Seven.
I have a boy seven.
and he's got game to play on this level. Isn't that something?
Oh, yeah. His name is Jason Chang. I know the boy who is Jason Chang. He came with me to Pinehurst. So we saw him at Pinehurst, played phenomenal. He had a great experience. This was the second time around going to Pinehurst. He qualified, like, 3 years ago to go, previous years, and then just kept his status up there by playing the local events and qualifying every single year. So he made it again last year, and they went up to Pinehurst, and now he's doing it again this year, getting to that state invitational and hopefully playing in the winter tour again.
I'm just thrilled. I'm thrilled that they're having such a good time and their parents are supporting them in the game that they enjoy. Do you happen to know how he got into the game? Was it his parents who played game?
Yeah, I think his father plays golf. His father's also a coach, his volleyball coach at HBA. And he's a good guy, really good guy, and athletic family. Just he picked it up. He just loved it. And he comes every weekend. He has his lessons with me. But he comes to practice. I see him like really grinding it out to hone in on his short game. So it's really a wonderful feeling to watch him just grow to love the game. And I think he's got a great future. Again, he's only 7, so he's got lots of years ahead of him. So you never know what's going to happen in the future.
Yeah, and it's a game for the life, you know, your life, a game of a lifetime and for a lifetime. I'll get the phrase right. And it really is, you know. I mean, you start when you're 5 or whatever, you know, 3. You're starting to kick around a little golf ball and your club and you're having fun. And you can do that when you're 87, you know. You can.
Yeah. And you know, it's really wonderful, and it came to heart to me this past time I went to Pinehurst. You know, I got to see a lot of really good kids go through the program at U.S. Kids Golf. I mean, we have Lexi Thompson that went through it, Justin Thomas, Jordan Spieth.
Wow.
Just recently, Allison Corpus, she's 3-time champion for Worlds at Pinehurst. Alexa Pano, who just won the LPGA, I've met her, saw her a couple of times. Mm-hmm. You know, all the great kids are coming up. And what's incredible is I'm there to witness it. I'm there. I directed the boys' 12 division, and there was a kid that shot something like 63, 70, and then 65. And I'm like, I'm totally in a totally wrong category of golf if I'm playing with these kids, because they were just – and they're playing from the whites. And I'm like, wait a second. this is not unreal. And then you see Colin Morikawa shoot 63, 65, 60, whatever. And it's like, oh, yeah, I see. So you can see the kids are really starting younger.
Yeah.
And it's great to see that. And I'm grateful to be a part of this whole vision of U.S. Kids Golf and getting the kids on the golf course and, you know, putting a club in the kid's hand and just witnessing them grow, because they could, sky's the limit with golf for them.
Yeah, absolutely. And I always want to, like, figure out what it is that makes them so boundless. So they're not in their head, you know. They're just in the game. And if we could just get adults to think the way children do, you know, it would be pretty amazing.
Yeah, you know what it is? I think when we're young and we're a child, we're innocent and we're fearless. Like, you know, last night I put a ladder up and I was climbing a ladder to go put up something, a sign or something. And a kid goes, hey, can I climb that ladder? And I'm thinking to myself, no, don't. Please don't. But kid was like fearless.
Right.
And, you know, as an adult, I'm afraid to climb that ladder. I'm like, that's only 12 feet tall, but I'm still afraid to climb the ladder. But as we grow older, we start to become a little more fearful because of maybe it's the things that we've run into or the challenges that we've experienced in life, whether it's in golf or life. And then we have that little fear factor, you know, like, oh, maybe I shouldn't do it, or, you know, instead of just letting go like a kid does.
Yeah, and making A is always a problem.
Yeah.
You just never, you know, oh dear, I look so stupid. I don't know what I'm doing, you know, and all these people are watching me. And children don't think like that at all.
Children don't. They're totally
into it. So this is where you can get, you earn different levels of priority status depending on how good you're playing. And then you can qualify for the regional, the international, the world team championships. This is a great program. And I can see why you're so excited to see how U.S. Kids has grown.
Yeah. And, you know, I'm really honored to be a part of this organization. Everyone that I see every single year, you know, from the owner of the company, Dan Van Horn, who's a tremendous supporter of mine out here in Hawaii, to Corey Floyd, who's the lead director for all the championship tournaments and regional tournaments that he sends me to and asks me to help direct and run. It's a really awesome family of people that really care about kids and growing the game of golf through kids. Because, I mean, all of the kids that have been really successful through U.S. Kids Golf, we're proud of them. I mean, that's our accolade. That's our ability to say, hey, look, this kid went through our program, and look, he's a PGA Tour star, LPGA Tour star. And, you know, granted, they work really hard to get there, but we provided a channel and an avenue for them to be able to shine.
Yeah.
And, I, you know, every time I go to Worlds, like I said, I walk that parade of nations and I see countries and kids from all over the world. And, you know, it's phenomenal. Just watching all these kids, it's just grinding it out. They're trying their best. And what's nice is that you have a tremendous amount of family support that comes out with them. And what better way to learn how to play this game with your family involved and engaged in every single aspect of it?
Yeah.
So I love it. I love it.
Yeah, absolutely. So all of this is happening today at Pearl Country Club, but something really cool is happening in your neck of the woods where you have your school, and that would be nighttime driving range?
Yes, I know. We've been talking about it, and finally it's come to fruition. Last night was our soft opening, our opening. But, Hawaii Prince Golf Club is my home course. I'm very grateful, again, for them having me there and my academy. And we have a lot of plans to grow the academy. But more importantly, we have now, with a lot of effort, I installed lights, made it safe for customers to feel good about it and coming out there at night. And it's a totally nice environment. I'll send you pictures, Danielle, and you can share it online. But
oh, I'd like to, yes.
Yeah, it's a beautiful place. I've got music playing. I've got plans to put food trucks out there, just, you know, and potentially some live entertainment on certain nights so that it's just a pleasant place for people to come and hit balls. And I'm going to install a pretty large, like, viewing screen and throw movies up for kids to watch while the parents are hitting golf balls. So, again, I'm promoting a clean family environment out there at Hawaii Prince. And now it's open till 9 o'clock at night.
That's nice. You know what I like about hitting balls at night? It's you don't see where they go.
Yeah.
There's something in this. It's freeing you. It frees you up. There's something about it. You know, you do see because the lights are there. But I tend to feel less, you know, inhibited about. And obviously, Danielle has some issues about standing in front of people and using a golf club. Get rid of that. If that's a problem you have, you know, just ignore it. Somehow, you'll really enjoy the game. Or go practice at night at Hawaii Prince on the driving range, because there's something freeing about being able to play in the dark, so to speak.
Yes, yes. And I think, honestly, between you and me, that's just age. I mean, I can't see the ball after 150 yards. So a lot of times I'm doing a night lesson, I'm like, hey, how'd that shot go? It looked good once it launched, but after about 150 yards, my vision's not there. So
maybe we need glow balls.
Yeah, we could. We could go that direction. lots of plans in store for Hawaii Prince. We still have several different phases that we're going through as far as the growth and construction of it. But this is this is one of the beginning phases, getting the lights on, getting people to be comfortable coming out at night. So, have my hats off to Hawaii Prince for helping me pull this off. A tremendous amount of synergy and good work relationship effort to making this happen.
Yeah. Now, who designed the Hawaii Prince golf course?
That's Arnold Palmer.
Right.
Arnold Palmer. Yeah. Great. I mean, it's
one of my favorite people.
Great to be a part of that.
Yeah.
Me too.
Amazing man. He was walking along. He was just up at Turtle Bay, and I think it was a Skins game, and he was walking along with a cup of coffee in his hands, and he stopped, and he just to talk, just have a chat. And he was so engaging and so warm and so personable. And I felt so comfortable, like I'd known him my entire life. He sent me a letter. Yeah, and I was like, wow, this is such an incredible human being. And Then as after a while, he said, well, you know, my bride is waiting for her coffee. Oh, dear. Go. And we got a good laugh out of that. But he was a great guy, a really great man. And we'd all miss him. And I'm glad I wanted to talk about Arnold. Thank you, Oliver Oliquiano, PGA, President and CEO, Island Pacific Golf Academy. How do we get in touch with you to get our kids enrolled?
A couple ways. You can visit my website, islandpacificgolf.com. I have links to all the things that I do. The other way, for U.S. Kids Golf, it's uskidsgolf.com. And then the other thing that we're going to talk about, is PGA Junior League. That's my fall season starting up next week, but it's pgajuniorleague.com. So even if you Google Oliver Oliquiano, you'll find me and everything that I do online. So, yeah.
We have a couple minutes, couple seconds.
Sure.
PGA Junior League. Let's talk. Mm-hmm. Who's that for? What age group?
Oh, that's open to pretty much it's five and up. A great program, which it's a team environment. You've got kids, I'll have 50 kids on my league, and I'll have threesomes or twosomes versus twosomes, and they go and battle out playing a scramble format and try to get the best score.
Wow.
And it's so much fun, I tell you. People ask me, is that stressful watching 50 kids? I'm like, no, not at all. It's more stressful worrying about the parents because they're stressful ones that live vicariously through their kids, and either they're upset or cheering, but mostly cheering, but for the kids to be out there just having fun. So, yeah, PGA Junior League, great format for kids. They do have the national championship is coming up at Greyhawk, and we didn't qualify this year, but Honolulu Country Club and I believe, is it HEC? And I can't remember the other team that qualified. Both from Oahu.
Yeah.
Qualified to go to the regionals at Santa Rosa, California. So they're going. Good luck to them. Reagan Lee and their Mililani or not Moanalua team. They qualified. So they're heading up there to Santa Rosa, California. My hat's off to them. Congratulations. And if they win it, they could possibly move on to nationals.
That's fantastic. We'll talk again about PGA Junior League because that's like league play. The PGA of America has done so much to grow the game and to provide different formats that would appeal to kids. And it's kind of like training Ryder Cuppers.
Yeah, it is. And you know what's nice about it is that the parents are so engaged in PGA Junior League. They love it, and they kept asking me, hey, Coach, when are we going to have one for the adults?
Oh, yes.
And I'm like,
yes.
And so we are. Occasionally I'll put out the family cup, it's called just a family golf. And I do the same thing for families where, one family can pit up against another family and they play against each other. And there's also a possibility to go national, too, on that. They just changed the format where, if you qualify, the families can go up to national. Which
amazing.
I think it's in Frisco, Texas. Yeah.
It's amazing. And you get a little travel and a reason to find out what a different place is like, a little journey. Thank you so much, Oliver, for being inside the clubhouse. Oliver Oliquiano, PGA President and CEO, Island Pacific Golf Academy. It's not the last time we'll talk. We'll talk again soon.
Thank you, Danielle.
Thank you.
Again. Okay.
Bye. All right. Matt Ginella is joining us in the clubhouse next. Matt Ginella, executive producer, The Fire Pit Collective. We'll be back after this. My name is Danielle Tucker. This is The Golf Club.
Stay tuned. We'll be hitting the greens with Danielle Tucker when we return to The Golf Club.
I'm Paul Morikawa, 2020 PGA Champion. In every golf journey, some goals can feel like an uphill climb, even intimidating, especially if you're on your own. But in the game of golf, helping hands are all around us. Whether you dream of a championship or you're just trying to make golf your thing, PGA coaches have industry-leading knowledge, guidance, and support to help you take the next step. Just like my PGA coach, Rick Sessinghaus, has always done for me. Wherever your golf journey is headed, a PGA coach can get you there. Find your PGA coach at pga.com/coach.
Hey, it is the Aloha Powers Labor Day weekend sale. That's all Labor Day weekend in the market for a really good riding mower. Aloha Power Equipment's Labor Day weekend sale. It is on. Why buy a riding mower from a big box store? Their stuff is, excuse me, but it's sitting outside getting dusty, dirty, and wet, and everything from Aloha Power Equipment is always covered and taken care of. And, you know, who's going to do your warranty and your service? Well, Aloha Power Equipment. They service everything they sell. 36-inch to 72-inch. The right mower for you is available at Aloha Power Equipment, and it is the Aloha Power Labor Day weekend sale. Deliveries available. Trade-ins are welcome. We ship off island. Aloha Power Equipment, Ivy Lay, next to the Costco gas station, and in Waipahu. Aloha Power Equipment, we put power at your fingertips.
Hoipu Bay on Kauai, South Shore. Share our home with Need a Gift for That Special Someone? Tired of giving fruit baskets you know are getting recycled? Give a Hoipu Bay Golf Gift Certificate. Whether it's a birthday, business, or anniversary, here's the one gift that is always the right size and the perfect date. Just give us a call and it will be waiting for you to pick up or mail to your office. There may even be time to sneak in a nine. Call us for the perfect gift, where great golf is played every day at Hoipu Bay on the Garden Isle.
KORLYNI Honolulu.
Got my new book, Three Tips to Play Better Golf. Practice, practice, practice. Now back to Danielle Tucker.
Matt Janella, executive producer of the Fire Pit Collective. Welcome into the clubhouse.
Thanks, Danielle. Always good to be with you.
You know, it's been forever, it seems like, since you've been here. And now you've got a podcast, The Fire Pit with Matt Janella. You are host Journeys with Matt Janella. On YouTube, you've got The Grind, an immersive docuseries. You've got so much going on with the writers that you have in the Fire Pit Collective. FirePitCollective.com front page. There's great writing from Alan Shipnuck, Michael Bamberger, excerpts from Michael Walters' look at Phil Mickelson, Phil the Gambler Mickelson. I got to ask you some questions about that because I didn't really get a chance in, you know, working 6 days a week, get a chance to really... What did Billy Walters write about in the excerpts? What did Phil say? What is up with Phil Mickelson?
A lot to unpack there. I mean, Billy Walters, you know, has had a long relationship with Phil Mickelson, and a lot of it had to do with betting, you know, gambling, and so Billy Walters just chronicles and details a lot of their betting history over the course of a, you know, 4 or 5 year stretch of time, in which, you know, he just spells out just to what, you know, to what degree Phil was gambling on sports in general. And then even spoke about a phone call that Phil made to Billy about, you know, wanting to bet on the 2012 Ryder Cup, Team USA. I think a lot of people, it wasn't news to a lot of people that Phil was doing a lot of betting, but when the first letter of the monetary value goes from an M in million to a B in billion, you know, that's significant. And then the amount of bets on any given day or average per day. Look, it's his money. He can do whatever he wants with it, but it was pretty revealing in a lot of ways, shapes and forms. And then what that leads to, what does that get him in terms of situations personally and financially, and then ultimately professionally. Is that ultimately what led to his incentive and motivation to, you know, kind of spearhead the breakaway league and the tour? And, you know,
yeah.
So, you know, it just kind of keeps kind of the rock in the pond and the ripple effect of all of that, you know, is left for you to kind of decide for yourself.
Yeah, you just said it, when it goes from an M to a B, a $1 billion bet.
Yeah, well, betting, you know, the amount of monetary value that he bet on sports.
Got it.
Yeah. Not a bet, but yeah.
If you add it all up. Yeah. Oh, my goodness. Talk about living on the edge. And then there's...
Well, the interesting thing there is, and this is what we talked about on one of our recent podcasts, is that if you take Tiger and Phil and you think about all the success that they've had on the course, which is, you know, it's historical. It's you know, you're talking about two of the best to ever play the game. And then all the stuff that they've had to deal with off the course, you know, whether that's, you know, addictions in any way, shape or form, and then all the stuff that comes with that, it's remarkable. I mean, as we know, anybody who knows who plays the game of golf, it's not an easy game. I mean, you got to have, you know, mental fortitude and you know, focus and be void of distraction. The idea that they can, that these guys have been managing all of this stuff off the course while also having all the success on the course, it's just, it's phenomenal.
It's a personality.
Yeah, it's something I'm certainly not capable of. I mean, if I got to remember to pick up my son at school while I'm playing golf, it's a distract. You know what I mean? Like, I'm like, okay, I got to remember to get, I got to get out. You know, like, I mean, and it affects my, let alone, you know, all the stuff they're dealing with. My goodness.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. Yeah. And it's what drives you to become the number one person. Then you have to keep all these balls going in the air, and you can't just walk away and no longer have the drive to beat, to succeed, to be the victor. And then you know, it's like you're always juggling, and you have to keep juggling. You can't just stop after the round is over. It's this. And it's a monster inside, you know, and there must, I don't know, you know, at what point it overcomes you. So I'm looking at Brooks, too, Brooks Koepka, you know, he got the Ryder Cup pick and Liv did their press release 10 minutes after it was announced by Zach Johnson that Brooks Koepka was going to be on the team. I read all this at the Fire Pit Collective. You've got a really good site. That is a really good site you've got.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, we're you know, we still feel like we're pretty new. We're just 2 years into this, and obviously Alan and Michael are two of the best that cover the game of golf in terms of writers and reporters. And and you know, we don't always agree with each other. There's a lot of good you know, perspectives and takes and then we, you know, spill that out of just the writing into podcasting and then some of the videos we do. But obviously I'm focused on lifestyle and travel and the podcast, in which I try to tell one story as told by many voices. And then, you know, Alan kind of leads up the Fire Drill podcast as it relates to news and the coverage. He's been in the middle of this, you know, this sort of drama that's unfolded as it relates to professional golf, Live versus Tour, the fight for the soul of the game. And so he's been immersed in all of that. And then, you know, Michael has done his own fair share of storytelling and reporting, and, so ultimately that, you know, at this point, plus we have a great support team and Jake Muldowney and Jed Vallejo and Bennett Kohut. And we've got, you know, we've got a team of contractors we work with who are shooters and editors. And, you know, we're finding our way in this kind of new age of media. And, It's you know, a lot of lessons learned, obviously. it's not easy. I thought it would be a little easier than it has been, but it's not. But it's all worth it. It's an opportunity to kind of take control over the stories we put out and where we put them and the length that they run and you know, the various platforms that we have access to is a fun time to be in this business. It's moving quickly and it takes up a lot of effort and energy and again I think that we just continue to learn and implement the lessons learned into where we're going in the future.
You know, it is an interesting time to be in the business you're in, and it's a wonderful time because there's so much information that you have to go get because the stories are so deep. And I need to ask you, what do you hear now about the PGA Tour and LIV coming to some agreement, not merging, I mean, but coming to some business agreement so they can coexist?
I've heard a lot of things, and at this point, I think what we know is that all parties involved wanted to sort of stop the legal proceedings and sort of stop the look into and the revealing of various text messages, emails, you know, various other businesses, I just think both sides were like, I don't think either one of us benefit from sort of, you know, putting out there into the world all the other stuff that's been going on behind the scenes. So I think they wanted, I do believe they wanted to all sort of stop that, which is what Herlihy and Jimmy Dunn, I think, got accomplished in, you know, the various meetings with the PIF leadership and then what ultimately came out of that, you know, that the players sort of reasserting themselves as people who need to be a part of this process. And most notably, you know, Tiger Woods kind of coming in and becoming a member of the board. I don't know how this all gets resolved, Danielle. I don't see or hear about a very simple solution. We know that there were a lot of PGA Tour sponsors that were not happy with the idea that they were being told they were going to be needing to put up more money for what has become a depleted product, a splintered product in terms of where, you know, players going to live, and some of those players being, you know, people who sell tickets, people who garner eyeballs. So the idea that the tour sponsors were kind of saying, hold on, we're paying more, but we're getting less, that didn't make a lot of sense to a lot of them. But then you have the PIP saying, well, okay, we'll come in and supplement some of that money that needs to happen to justify these payouts. I mean, you know, the fact is Tiger is done and Phil is essentially, he's certainly done with the PGA Tour. So, you know, if you look at these guys, like, I think Victor Hovland's a really sweet kid, and so is Colin Morikawa, and so is Xander Schauffele, and Patrick Cantlay, and is an impressive golfer. But, like, are these the types of players that are justifying, you know, $18 million bonuses at the end of a season? I mean, something.
Oh, we're just losing you, Matt. We just faded out when you came to your critical sentence there.
Oh, well, I'm just saying it just seems a little off. Something's off to me in terms of the amount of money going out and the energy and the eyeballs and the ticket sales around the game of golf. I don't know how this continues to go.
I agree with you. And, you know, the PIF's got enough money to, you know, fund the entire universe and have more coming in. You know, they don't ever worry about it. Money not having any, while the PGA Tour is obviously having some money issues. So, yeah, and I don't see a way for this to come clean in any way. And where the money comes from, it's it's gotten too money. I'm just tired of talking about $18 million. It's like, really?
Yeah. That was a bonus. I mean, that's a bonus. That's not even, you know, so I mean, at some point, like, I've honestly, Danielle, I've really, and I've said this a couple times now, but through all of this and being immersed and watching, listening, learning, and reading, I've just been so disenchanted with the whole aspect of the professional game, to the point where I could definitely see myself, you know, continuing to watch the majors and the occasional Sunday afternoon last five holes, maybe if it's, you know, someone of note or something. But I just the idea of investing so much time, effort, and energy into what just seems to be one big giant sort of greed fest and cash grab and, you know, inflated checks to people who are obviously very good at their craft, but are they truly actually justifying the type of money that's being thrown around? I don't see it. I mean, I really just enjoyed watching the Walker Cup at St. Andrews and the Old Course, and you got, you know, amateurs playing at the Home of Golf. That was soothing to me, you know. But I just as soon really focus on the avid amateur, you know, the game itself.
Yep.
The for the retail golfer seems to be very healthy. There's a lot of growth when it comes to women and kids. You know, coming out of COVID, I'm you know, I just feel like there's so much good that's happening in and around the game. There's so many good courses available to us, and then also being built by the right type of architects, the right type of people who do the right kind of stuff as it relates to architecture. The trends that are going on now with short courses and putting courses and things like Topgolf, and the revival or the sort of the focus on, you know, resuscitating municipal golf, and, you know, places that we've talked about a million times, but then it goes on. But, you know, the Goat Hill Parks and the Winter Park Nines, and that, you know, some of those have become blueprints and models for other municipals to sort of start taking a look at their green space. And so, I mean, I just, for me, I'm really kind of shifted my focus, effort, and energy and resources as it relates to the fire pit. You know, Alan will drop another book here in a couple of weeks. And after that, we're going to kind of move on and evolve out of this whole day-to-day, you know, chase around the news of professional golf and move more towards long-form, timeless storytelling around the game that I think that we all know, love, and play, and that's had big impacts on our life as it relates to relationships and education and, you know, sort of cultural immersion. It's, you know, it's, that's what I love.
Yeah. Boy, you've summed it up for me. I mean, that's, I'm tired of that money grab over there. And don't understand it anymore. Don't want to be a part of it. You travel around the world. I am amazed at how many. What are your miles? How many miles do you have?
a lot of miles. But that to me is the, you know, we've spent 31 days in Ireland this year. I played the father daughter at Waterville with our daughter Kylie, who's 19.
Wow.
And talk about a magical event put on by Car Golf Travel and hosted at Waterville. We had three beautiful days. You had 40 teams of fathers and daughters. We had, you know, our daughter who's, you know, like I said, 19. She had her first, the drinking age over there is 18. I should clarify, but she had her first pint of Guinness, her first shot of whiskey. She played her first 18 holes, full 18 holes of golf, played her first golf tournament. She got better every day, basically every shot. My wife and little guy, six-year-old Bandon, was with us and kind of followed us along. And it was like, you know, the networking and the relationship building for a daughter who, you know, went through 2 years of COVID, kind of missed out on her sophomore and junior year of high school, and got access to that kind of environment, got to see me kind of in my environment.
Mm-hmm.
It really improved and forwarded sort of our relationship as father and daughter, and she got to go and see another culture. She grew exponentially right before our very eyes. as a young woman, and as she's now kind of taking the next steps in her life, and then I watched her interact with other young women, and I got to interact with a lot of other fathers, and then we all got to interact with all each other's families, and then I went on to play the father's son a couple weeks later, and my little guy's too young and my dad's too old, but I adopted, quote, another one of the fathers who brought two sons. I got to play with a guy named Matt Michael Anthony. I mean, and same thing, 96 teams, fathers and sons. So those snapshots of those particular trips, those weeks at a course like that, in a country like that, with a culture like that, that to me is the benefit of travel. It's the benefit of the game. It's the venue. It's the opportunity to make those life altering, memories and experiences. That to me is where I really want to focus all of my efforts and energy and storytelling.
In the Fire Pit Collective. Absolutely. Absolutely. With you 100%. Matt Janella is executive producer and co-founder. Are you a solo founder?
No, co-founder. We, at the time, I had a producer who I'd worked with for several years. We had kind of hatched an idea of being able to do kind of a specific independent media company around travel and lifestyle storytelling. And then ultimately what happened is COVID hit not long after we were sort of breaking away from mainstream media and specifically the Golf Channel at that time. So then I kind of had to pivot, really, because it was like, oh my God, what, I'm a travel centric, media company in the face of COVID, which was some scary times. So that's when, in talking with Alan, he had some of the same frustrations I had with the people that he was working with in terms of limiting his ability to tell the stories he wanted to tell, or shortening the stories he felt needed to be longer, or do you see what I'm saying? Like a little bit of freedom and control was, I think, what every, storyteller is after. And so in talking with Adam, we kind of, that was the moment in which we decided to join forces. And then it was, I think we got that. From that point forward, we got a little too big, too fast. We expanded our stable of storytellers probably prematurely in looking back. Not probably, I think that's probably true. That's some of my lessons learned. If I had to write a memo about sort of what we did wrong at the start of a startup, it was too big, too fast. But then we've lessons learned. We've gotten it back to more of a startup mentality, a smaller group of storytellers, but we're hyper-focused on some of the stuff I've just discussed with you now, which is
awesome.
Long-form, timeless storytelling, and so that's where we're looking forward to going. For we're doing stories on Golden Gate Park and Paso Tiempo and Gamble Sands and David McClay Kidd, and just got back from Montana where Bill Coore and Ben Crenshaw are building another course there. It's going to be spectacular. Unfortunately, it'll be private, but it's an opportunity for us to tell that story for that particular client. Canal Shores, Cobbs Creek in Philadelphia. I mean, these are the stories that I think have always interested me. As you know, we've talked for years and years about architecture and development and restoration and the architects themselves. And bringing those stories to light again is going to be a big part of our future business.
Awesome. Matt Janella, I have to wrap. Executive producer, The Fire Pit Collective. I hope you'll be back on again in not too distant future. It has been months. Thank you so much.
Well, just love and hugs and all kinds of stuff for
Maui.
Everything that's happening in Hawaii and specifically Maui and Lahaina. It's devastating, obviously.
Okay. Thank you. I have to thank the sponsors. Thank you to MD Restoration, Flood from the Insider Out, Flood, Fire Disaster. You need help immediately, and MD Restoration's on it any time of the day, right away. If disaster strikes your home, your office, you call them. MD Restoration, 528-3434. Honored to have the support of the Aloha Section PGA. You heard it today from one of our great PGAs. Takes a lot of time and love of the game, but they love to teach. Find yourself a PGA. The market is really good for you today because Aloha Power's Labor Day weekend sale is on, and they've got great products for you, including their riding mower. Aloha Power Equipment's Labor Day weekend sale. Check them out. From 36 to 72 inch, you need the right mower for you. Delivery available. Trade-ins welcome. They ship off island. Aloha Power Equipment. We put power at your fingertips. And when Sears opened more than 60 years ago, who made their signs? Well, the Honolulu Sign Company did, and they're making signs today since 1939. That is Honolulu Sign. My name is Danielle Tucker. This is the Golf Club. Thank you. May you hit the sweet spot every time.
You've been listening to the award-winning Golf Club radio show with Danielle Tucker on the Golf Club Network statewide. Tune in next week, and we'll tee it up together only on the Golf Club.
Copyright 2023.